You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares.
Hi all, welcome to Nick Luck Daily. It's Tom Stanley in for Nick on Thursday the 4th of April. Rishi Prasad is my guest today. We'll talk to him soon enough. He will be talking a little bit later on about the increasingly intrusive nature of affordability checks. You may have seen a lot of this on social media of late, as ever, but perhaps more so in the last couple of days because of some evidence that's been put out there by punters and those checks that they have been subjected to. We will have more words and thoughts on the tragic loss of Stefano Cerchi yesterday, including Amy Murphy, who had such a long association with Stefano. She'll be along to give her thoughts, and our thanks to her for doing so. We do start, though, with Horsepower, a new campaign launched by the BHA to tackle welfare and present all the facts head-on. Here to tell us a bit more is your regular host, Nick Luck.
Well, around this time of year, around Grand National time, there's always that slightly more intense focus on horse welfare and on how we as a sport convey our message in this respect. And to that end, I, and I'm sure many others, are really heartened that Horsepower, British Racing's new platform, is going live with its digital hub, www.horsepwr.co.uk, has become the central resource for horse welfare information. It's designed to share and promote the facts around welfare in horse racing and the life of a thoroughbred. And it brings together information on horse welfare in one easy-to-find, easy-to-read place, and crucially, with facts, and plenty of them, and data provided, and questions answered. Horsepower delves into those areas that racing has committed to improve, from reducing risk on and off the racecourse to better supporting horses when they leave the sport, which is something we've been hearing about an awful lot with the work that's been done on the Thoroughbred Census that we showcased on the podcast during the last couple of weeks. Now, the campaign's name, Horsepower, and that PWR acronym, which is at the end of the website, was derived from the ambition to better connect with people around purpose, welfare, and responsibility. I myself particularly like the first of those, purpose. I think it's important when you're talking about welfare, as we saw after the Grand National last year, to take a bold and confident approach, which puts the thoroughbred right at the front and centre of this entire campaign to promote its status and purpose as an equine athlete. I think it's incumbent on all of us, and to that end, I'd call on all of you to share and support the campaign where and when you possibly can. And you can do that by visiting www.horsepwr.co.uk, and the hashtag is horse, capital P, capital W, capital R. It's a cross-industry campaign led by the BHA and GBR, so British Horse Racing and Great British Racing, and it's supported by the independently chaired Horse Welfare Board and by the Jockey Club. So I'd urge you to get involved. The website again, www.horsepwr.co.uk, and hashtag your tweets, horse, capital P, capital W, capital R. This is British Racing's new Horsepower campaign.
And here to tell us a bit more about Horsepower is the head of communications at the BHA, Robin Mounsey, who also sits on the independently chaired Horse Welfare Board. Robin, welcome along. Thanks ever so much for your time. I guess the first port of call is why is there a need for this campaign and why now?
Yeah, hello, Tom. Thank you very much for having us on. So welfare concerns are a barrier to engagement with the sport. We know this, all the data tells us this. And this is an issue which may not affect us just in the future. It's not just about losing our potential social license in the future. It's something that's a concern now. People are being put off by racing because of concerns about welfare. This doesn't just apply to people who are not racing fans. This, we know, applies to people who are engaged with the sport but could be turned off if their concerns about welfare grow. So this campaign is about education and reassurance and setting out the high welfare standards and safety standards that exist within the sport. We want to be absolutely clear about who this is aimed at. This is about those people who are current racing fans or who could be racing fans in the future. This is not about reaching those people who will always be opposed to the sport. That's not who this campaign is aimed at. So that's why the need for it, and why now? Well, initially, it's worth noting that the need for a campaign of this nature was recommended by the independently chaired Horse Welfare Board, which, as you say, I'm a member of, and that was part of their Life Well Lived strategy. In terms of why, so that's where it came from originally. In terms of why we're launching at this exact moment, well, it's pretty obviously that timing-wise, we're entering the period when the sport generally comes under the most scrutiny. We saw that last year. I'm sure it will be the case again this year. So this campaign is about putting us on a much more solid footing and much better prepared to be able to speak about the sport and its welfare standards with confidence over the coming weeks. But just finally on this, it's important to note that this isn't just a campaign which exists in April alone. We should be talking more confidently and more positively and more proactively about welfare all year round. But it was obviously important that we got it up and running for the coming weeks ahead.
I guess the thing that really strikes me about the campaign is it's not necessarily normal, you know, BHA presentation of facts in its imagery, which I think is a hugely positive thing. It's a bold move from the BHA, a bold look as well in terms of look and language. Why was the decision made to present it in such a way?
Yeah, we absolutely wanted to be bold and present welfare in a new way. Historically, racing's approach to welfare, when it's communicated around it, has always been through the prism of care. Look how well cared for our horses are. And that would be reflected in the imagery. It would be images of stable staff kind of caring for horses. And the language would all be around the lifestyle that horses lead. And while it is true, horses are well looked after, and we should be proud of that, that is not the battleground. People know that racehorses are well cared for. Even those who are wildly opposed to the sport acknowledge that horses are well cared for within training. But instead, what people are concerned about are other issues. It's things like fallers, injuries, what happens to horses who are injured, how many horses are bred for sport, what happens to horses when they leave the sport, does the whip hurt? Those are the sort of areas that people are concerned about. So we want to tackle those concerns head on and provide education and reassurance around the sort of issues and facts, and really core to the heart of this as well. It's all about facts. It's about openness and transparency. It's against those sort of areas that reputation is judged. And that's how you grow trust, is by providing facts and tackling those things, those areas that are of concern to people head on.
And I guess first port of call is getting the industry on side. Do you get the sense that that is the case and most parts of the industry are very much behind this? Or do you feel that more work needs to be done in that area?
Well, it's interesting. When we set out on this process, we were concerned as to see how this was going to land with the sport, whether there was a view that there is a need for this or not. Anyway, as we've carried out the process of developing the campaign, we've also been leading on a really quite vast engagement process around it. So speaking to stakeholder bodies, speaking over the last couple of weeks to individuals from within the sport, trainers, jockeys and so on. And what we've been finding from all these conversations is that really the support for it has been basically unanimous. I'm sure there will be some who question it, of course. That's absolutely, they're right, and that's absolutely understandable. But all, like I say, I'll go back to the data, all the data and all the conversations that we're having support the need for this, and we believe it's what is right and needed for the sport. And we're really encouraged by the support that we've seen from across the industry so far.
And the campaign itself, you know, the imagery, it looks expensive in a positive way, I think, but there might be some people, Robin, saying, well, hang on, could this money be better spent elsewhere? How is it being funded, and has it been a very costly process?
Yeah, we've had those comments as well as we've been engaging that this looks expensive, but which, as you say, we take as a positive indicator of the quality of the campaign. But I can really reassure you that it's not. We've worked very hard to do this on what has been in the initial stages a quite limited budget. We've used a small agency. All the imagery has been sourced from across the industry and retouched. And then we've had a small team of us working really, really hard over and above the day job, really, to deliver this. Obviously, we can't give figures around this, but I would say that whatever number you're thinking of that this costs, you probably, I'd say half it, probably half it again, and then probably half it again. It's that sort of money that we're talking. This first stage has been funded by the BHA and Great British Racing, and then a very welcome contribution from the Jockey Club as well, who stepped up to provide funding and to who we're extremely grateful. The funding we've had is really just enough to cover the basic building blocks of a campaign, and that's what's being delivered here in stage one. We have ambitions to grow the campaign once these sort of fundamental building blocks are in place, and we're looking at options for that funding. But it's important to stress even then that the money we'll be looking at for the early stages of the campaign, it's not going to be the sort of figures that you would associate with expensive PR campaigns. And we think that's the right approach because you need to go about these things the right way. You've got to prove the concept first, see that it works, check that the campaign direction is the right sort of one, the messaging's right and the approach is right, and that it's actually having an influence on people in a limited way. And then if so, you hone it, you improve it, and you grow it. But you've got to prove the concept first. And the final thing we'd say is if this is done right, then we'd see the money that spent on it as an investment rather than a spend. So again, if welfare is a barrier to engagement, and this campaign helps reassure some people, prevent some people leaving the sport, maybe attract some new people to join the sport if those concerns are broken down, then actually you see a return on investment as well.
Just to get to into some of the figures, I guess the thing that leapt out at me is the separation of flat and jump fatality statistics. Is there a chance? I mean, is there a concern on your part that, for example, jump racing with the 5-year rolling fatality, sorry, fatal injury rate 0.42% compared to that of flat racing being 0.08%? Is there a worry that jump racing could suffer as a result of this transparency?
We've considered that, but the view is no, it's important to be honest and open. That's the only way people are going to trust you. We have to be comfortable enough to acknowledge that racing comes with risk and that those risks are elevated in jump racing. We have to show that the sport sets very high standards and is doing what it can to reduce avoidable risk. But ultimately, this campaign is about us speaking with pride and confidence about the sport. Now, it could be that there are some people who that data puts them off, but we think if presented properly in the context, correct context, then it many more will actually be reassured by what we're showing them. The figures show that the sport is invested in safety, and we believe that many people will be comfortable with the sport's approach to risk and ultimately more likely to engage if they feel that they're being given the truth, the facts, honestly and openly.
What are the areas, Robin, that you and the team feel, given the transparent approach, that the sport needs to do better in ultimately, do you think that's come out of these findings?
Yeah, and I think it's important to reflect that, like I say, the campaign is about openness and transparency, and there's a lot of data on the website. People visiting horsepower.co.uk will see that really the most important page, the page we put front and center, is a facts page, which sets out all the data that we possess around racing and around welfare and safety and racing in different aspect around different aspects of it. And what that page also does is it presents the data that we have and acknowledges the areas where there's data that we need and how we're working to fix those. So, and there's a few areas that applies to, and we've probably areas that we've acknowledged in the past, but we do so again here. Worth mentioning, first of all, on this, by the way, that the Horse Welfare Boards, which, as you said previously, I'm a member of, it's de developed a dedicated data unit. And that data, is making a massive difference across the board in how data is collected and used. It's a real game changer and something the sport can be really proud about. But there's more to be done. So, a couple of examples. We've got figures from the 2015 foal crop, which suggests that 69% of British foals bred that year went on to race. So that's good data, but we need more up-to-date studies. And we can do more to understand what happens to those who don't make it to the sport and where they go. Along similar lines, the recent thoroughbred census showed that 80% of horses who are bred for racing can be traced, even now when many of them are very old. I mean, that's fantastic and something the sport can take great heart in. But we've got an ambition to reach 100% traceability of horses as they make their first move away from the sport. We can do more to capture data about injuries and fatal injuries that are picked up about horses away from the race course. So that we've got tremendous data in the sport, and then lots of it's up there on horsepower.co.uk. But we want this site to continue to grow and actually drive the gathering of more and more data, which can then be put into the public domain. So yeah, there's plenty more to be worked on as well.
Robin, thanks for your time.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Tom. Much appreciated.
Our broadcaster Rishi Prasad is my guest today. We're going to get through a good bit, Rish, but we will start with this horsepower and what Robin had to say there. Overall, what do you make of the campaign?
I think it's a huge positive, Tom. Over the last 12 months in particular, since the attention that the Grand National garnered last year, and animal rights campaigners being across the sport for a short period of time, where it seemed that that's where they were trying to attract most of attention, it's really come to light over the last 12 months, and a lot's been done to concentrate the awareness of just what a good job we do in racing. But obviously, it's an ongoing process. And having a centralized point, centralized website, Horsepower, H or PWR, as it's called, I think it's a great idea. And a brief look through what it's offering shows some really strong statistics, some really strong facts. And I think that's the important thing. I mean, I spoke to Gabby Whitfield, who, along with Robin Mounsey, they've done a lot of work in getting this up and running. And that's the basis of what she was saying when I spoke to her about it. It's all about facts. It's all about detail of what actually happens, as opposed to perceptions, not just perceptions from people outside the sport who are anti-racing or who have concerns about the sport, but for people within the racing game who operate daily, who would like to refer to facts in order to defend our position, in order to actually be proud of our position as well. And there's a wealth of information on the website, which is actually very reassuring from a racing fan's point of view, a fan of the horse, that there's a lot already in place. There's a lot of answers to the questions that we get so often. You know, like you, I'm sure. Many people get, you and I, we get lots of questions about whether, you know, from people who aren't really huge horse racing fans or who may be against it, but who are part of our social scene, who will ask questions about horses, who don't know. It's actually quite nice to be able to point them to this, or even us refer to it ourselves and show them the statistics, the numbers, the information about how horses are cared for from the moment they're born to the day they go into the pasture. You know, it's always important to be able to back up our sentiment with actual important facts and figures, and this is great.
And I think one of the criticisms leveled at the sport after, well, this time last year with the disruption to the Grand National and that followed in the months subsequent to that was that the sport was being reactive, not proactive. Well, this is proactive. And just, some of the FAQs on the site almost took me aback, really, because it stands in stark contrast with how the sport normally approaches this sort of subject. Is racing safe for horses? Detailed answer. What has racing done to improve horse welfare? Why is the whip used? Does the whip hurt horses? What happens when a horse falls? Why can some horses not be saved when they are seriously injured? How are racehorses put down on course? All of these questions, which we haven't been front foot about in the past, and there might be some Rishi who out there who say, "Well, hang on, well, we're making a rod for our own back if we bring these questions and these facts into the public eye." But I can only really applaud the sport for being this front-footed about it.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I'd rather us have everything ready to go rather than wait for something to happen like it did last year and then react afterwards. The other important point, I believe, about this research and how this information has come to hand has been a lot of focus groups have been questioned about their perception of horse racing, about their perception of horse welfare. And it's in response of some of their concerns that these are the questions have been formulated and the answers found, which is important as opposed to just assuming what you think people might want to know. I think there's still research to be done. I still think there are things that can be added to it, but I certainly think that this is a hugely positive, beneficial move to the sport of horse racing in particular, and horse welfare, and I applaud it.
Well, we touched yesterday on the tragic loss of Stefano Cerchi, and it was all very raw initially early on yesterday morning. Amy Murphy, who I spoke to yesterday, has kindly agreed to join now and really give some words on Stefano and how her team are doing. Amy, thanks for your time. Stefano, you had a long association with. You described him to me yesterday as part of your family at home. How are you and the team doing, first of all?
Yeah, I know. I think, listen, in the circumstances, like, was pulled together, and we do have a very close-knit team, which I'm incredibly fortunate to have behind me, and they're as okay as can be when we've lost such a soul in our lives.
It really struck me yesterday, words from his friends, his weighing room colleagues, people like yourself and Marco as well, just to get a sense of the person that he was, what a popular, positive, bright young man he was, and funny as well. That was the thing that really emerged.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, he brightened up every room he walked into. Never was the yard not a smiley, happy place when Stefano would be, in for the morning. Not only on a racing front, but on a personal front as well. Lemos, my husband, and I were, obviously very good friends of his, as was a lot of my staff. And it's just a complete tragedy to have somebody's life taken away from them at such a young, such a young age, where he literally the world was his oyster running up until yesterday.
Yeah, no, it really was, and such, bravery and aspiration shown to go to Australia and ride there. When he got to you, Amy, he was obviously an even younger man. Can you remember those sort of first few days when he first joined up with the team, what he was like then?
Yeah, no, of course. He was always very much a cheeky character, and he was, always the centre of every joke would be made by him. And it was that's what we were all trying to put a smile on our face yesterday by remembering all the fun times we've had with him, and obviously we'll continue to do that. We wish they were still in person, but we we'll make sure that we endeavour to
Amy, thanks ever so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And again, condolences to you and the team back home.
Thank you.
Rishi, Amy Murphy there. Look, I guess the thing that strikes me is you can hear horse hooves in the background. A yard doesn't stop. But they'll have all taken some pulling together yesterday.
It's been a brutal time for the sport of horse racing, but particularly over the last 24 hours or so, with the news about Stefano Cerchi. The information that's come to light about his personality and about his character and the way that he enriched so many people, it's made it even harder to accept what's happened. The words of Callum Shepherd, even the Fallon family, Marco Botti, Amy Murphy, speaking to you today, it really strikes deeply with the resonance that he was a wonderful character, a wonderful young man, but added to the fact that that word in there is young, it's just it's a brutal event to have happened, and all we can do is all I can do is send condolences to his family and friends. It must be very, very hard for them at the moment, and nothing that we say here on this podcast or anywhere else can probably properly describe the depth of feeling that they are experiencing at the moment.
And you reference Callum there. I I'm sure Callum won't mind. He's put it on social media. Just read a paragraph of the a beautiful tribute he wrote to Stefano. He said, in the middle of it, you will read of him described as a jockey, Stefano Cerchi, who has ridden X winners at racecourses Y and Z. Whilst I know this is to put into context that despite his heritage, he was very much one of our own. It's somewhat hard to see him described in these terms. He was not defined by his abilities in the saddle or by the races he has won. What defined him to us, those lucky enough to have known him, and I really do mean lucky, was the human being he was.
Exactly that. Really beautiful words from Callum, and you know, given the fact that he knew him so well, able to sum up exactly the sentiment that I imagine a lot of people who came into contact with Stefano will be feeling today and for the foreseeable future.
Well, you may have seen in the news yesterday that the Graham Lee Racing Club has launched in aid, of course, of the recovery of Graham Lee, whose daughter Amy joins me now. Amy, thanks ever so much for your time. Tell us about the idea behind the racing club.
Oh, it's all come from Paul Hannigan and Craig Lidstone, everyone involved in the racing club. It's just, it's such an incredible idea, and to create something so positive out of such a horrible situation.
And people can get involved from anywhere, can they, if they want to be part of the club? Obviously, the reasons behind it are all for such an important cause, but it's there for anyone to get involved with, and it will involve the usual fun of being part of a racing club.
Absolutely. Anyone can go onto the Good Racing website and pay the £17 annual fee, and there's so much to be active on following the horse we've got this. Being invited to race days and entering fun competitions, it's not only for a good cause, but it's a really enjoyable thing to be a part of.
Do you see it growing, Amy? Is the idea for the future to, you know, have a good few horses in training with the club?
I mean, I'm not very good at the future. I mean, I set my fundraising at £100, so things, I mean... I hope so. It would be amazing, but I mean, what we've got already is already incredible.
I think your fundraising in the past has proved that you're pretty adept at it, Amy. So don't be too hard on yourself. I think you've got a proven track record with regard to that. The other thing yesterday, of course, that, you know, it was 20 years on from your dad's Grand National win, and that, I mean, that wasn't lost on anyone. There was some sort of, you know, great old photos going around about that. That must have been, in a way, a big day for your family yesterday with a few of those old picks knocking around.
Oh, my God, yeah. It was just, it's so special. And it's just, we're reflecting a lot on Dad's career at the minute and all of the highlights, and obviously the Grand National definitely being one of them. It was a really nice day that the four of us could spend together in the evening. Looking back,
That's really nice to hear. So if anyone wants to be part of the Graham Lee Racing Club, how do they do it, Amy?
You just go onto the Good Racing website and there will be a little ad that pops up saying buy now for the Graham Lee Racing Club membership, and all the details are there.
Great stuff. Thanks ever so much. Good luck with it all.
Thank you.
Okay, Rish, There's been sort of again, I feel this comes in waves, betting accounts and bookmakers and the companies they use looking into people's history, resetting up accounts, re-getting bets on, and the invasion of privacy which this has caused. And I feel we're on another one of the crest of one of these waves again on social media, which you've been tagged in and been part of. So just to explain your position on this and why you've been so active now on Twitter talking about this.
Well, I have done the last few days quite a bit. Actually, it all started by posting a photo of you stuffing your face at breakfast in Dubai.
Often the catalyst for consternation.
Normally from closer to home, I would suspect, than from far afield. I won't go through the process. I won't bore anyone with the process of how it led to discussions about affordability checks and what was being done. But of course, we are still waiting to hear more news. We believe some news might be imminent on affordability checks. But one deeply worrying conversation that I had on social media over the last few days, which won't come as a surprise to many people, was an open banking request from one bookmaker, Bet365, for a client to provide access to their principal bank account via a platform called BetBudget. There was an attached link in the email that was sent as well. There've also people talking about requests for your latest tax returns. This obviously triggered a series of messages again then on social media, with a number of punters speaking about similar requests from other bookmakers, whether Skybet, etc. Asking for a direct access or a link, or providing a link to your betting account, or sorry, for your bank account. It was an extraordinary one. I mean, I understand that there had been, obviously I know that there had been the possibility of banking or open banking requests. I didn't realize that it would mean that you would pass on the link and then step out of that access. I still thought you would have some control over that access. You were right. I mean, who would you share access to your bank account with, Tom? Maybe your better half, your other half?
I mean, you're basically what, you know, if you had a financial advisor, your better half, your accountant. I mean,
if you're a limited company or something like that, you might share it with your accountant.
That's it.
But would you share it with a company called BetBudget, who also use your data to, I mean, in their terms and conditions, they talk about using your data to share a pool of information for statistics and trends, etc. But also, you know, they also talk about sharing it with third parties. I mean, all to have a bet. It is absolutely ridiculous. Obviously, this isn't something new. Punters are subject already to checks by bookmakers. Oh, and we know it's been going on for years. But it's clear, as you highlighted in the intro to this particular subject, we are at a critical point. Yet it worries me that, and many other people, obviously, that not enough has been done, not enough is being done. You know, obviously there's been a great deal of promotion and PR over the last few months, you know, asking, getting quotes from prominent racing figures to say about the danger of affordability checks. But, you know, we're in the deep stretch here. I mean, I've spoken on this podcast before about maybe a different approach, you know, using research and testimony from experts on how addictions are cured, because that's the basis for what we are going into regarding affordability checks. The basis of where this research and where this action has come has been to try and cure or solve the issue of problem gambling. But I'm pretty certain that experts on this sort of thing wouldn't say that affordability checks will cure it. You know, betting, drinking, whatever the vice is, online shopping, etc. They aren't problems in their own right, unless the individuals who have deep-rooted issues bring the problems to the actual activity, whatever that is. You know, stopping them won't fix their actual problem. Obviously, as many of you know, millions of us enjoy a bet, enjoy having a drink, etc., without any danger, without any problems. And I think the approach to tackling the problem could have yielded better results for racing if we still have a chance to go about it in a slightly different way and point out that introducing affordability checks won't actually solve someone's problem gambling full stop. It will move the vice around. And are you actually now then responsible for that? Or have you felt, okay, well, we stopped them from gambling with these ridiculous affordability checks, so the next thing that they go to is not our problem?
I guess the issue might be that we're so far down the road re-affordability checks that tackling, as you described, the problem at source and trying to address the behavioural patterns behind problem gambling, it feels so far away from where we are now, which is a long way down the affordability checks road with seemingly no way right back to the start.
I don't think it's completely dead in the water that we could halt the affordability checks by providing proper research and testimony for how addiction is cured, because that's what we're trying to do. All the conversations, when put into focus, they talk about trying to stop a minuscule number of people from becoming a danger to themselves, which is problem gambling. Now, that doesn't affect the majority of us, but the checks that they want to impose will affect far more people than they're trying to help. And as a consequence, it will have a negative effect on the sport of horse racing. That is without question. So how do you focus on helping those people? Well, I don't think, and having had conversations with people who understand addiction and how to cure it, that the way to do it is by going, oh, you can't do it because you can't afford to do it. That's not how it's fixed. The fix comes from something else. You identify the problem, then you work at curing it with different methods, not just say, right, that's it, you can't have a bet, so go away now, do your vice somewhere else in some other manner, some other mean. And that's where we need to sort of present it to the authorities, to point out to them that what they're doing isn't actually going to do anything. It's not really going to make any significant impact on these people's lives by just stopping them. And I've spoken to Nick on this podcast a few times about it, a couple of times, and it's the fact what's frustrating is that it's been tackled from the wrong angle from the outset, and we've ended up in this situation where racing is on a critical point where people are being asked to provide access to their bank. I mean, that's just ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. You know, you don't walk into a pub and somebody says, "All right, let's have a. Can I check what money you brought with you, and can I check whether you can afford this? Have you got your credit card details and all this sort of stuff?" You know, no, it's not done like that, because I don't know how we've ended up in a position where they've gone, right, gambling is a massive issue. I mean, is it just a vote winner? Is it something that somebody came up with on a whim and felt that this was going to make them going to attract more attention at an election? I don't know that we've ended up in this sort of position. And I don't know also how bookmakers are able to impose different levels of affordability checks. And there's nothing uniform about it, yet they're conducting these checks, obviously, on their own. And each bookmaker is different, you know, how they go about doing it, the information, the request. It's such a mess. And ultimately, it's all done to try and, in quotes, solve and cure problem gambling and protect the problem gamblers. Yet, actually, you're not helping them fix what's actually wrong with them. You're just moving them to something else.
Well, chance now to check in with the Riding a Dream Academy, and they are launching some taster days to introduce more young people to racing. Their co-founder and director, Naomi Lawson, joins me to tell me a little bit more. Naomi, hope all well. Tell me about the taster day program.
Well, we've introduced taster day make racing more relevant to a previously untapped group of young people, and they're helping to bring in more diverse talent into the industry. So we run them in conjunction with our partners at the British Racing School, and it's really a chance for young people who've never ridden before, never heard of racing, never been to Newmarket, to ride for the first time, to take part in a horse handling session, to have a go on an equisizer and try out their jockey pose, and just find out about the myriad opportunities for them in the sport.
Are people that want to get involved limited by their geographical location, or not necessarily?
I think so. We've predominantly been working with schools and youth organisations in London, and obviously opportunities to ride and to have access to horses is very, very limited in such an urban area. So we focus on those groups. At the Academy, we've got a particular focus of working with diverse ethnic communities as well. So 75% of the students that attended the Taster Days at the end of last year came from those communities, and we're hoping that by providing these opportunities, we're making racing more relevant to those groups and also helping to improve diversity and inclusion within the sport as well.
Okay, and how can people find out more?
So if you're interested in the Taster Days, then just go to our website, which is ridingadreamacademy.com, or email us at info@ridingadreamacademy.com to book future opportunities.
And, you know, I guess that, you know, the Riding a Dream Academy it still feels sort of new, but, you know, there's a good few years body of work behind you now. Are you starting to see a difference now of people that have come through the ranks actually going on and working in the industry?
Yeah, definitely. We run wide range courses as well, so residential weeks and scholarship courses as well, and those are for people that got a little bit more riding experience. And we were just filming with a couple of students who are now working in the industry in Newmarket last week, and it was just amazing just to see them out on Warren Hill looking $1 million and slowly but surely helping to change the sport.
Naomi, thanks for your time. All the best.
Thank you.
Well, continuing with our Overbury People feature in association with Overbury Stud, Dominic Ellsworth joins me on the line. Dom works for the RMF Group and runs their RMF Equine course, which has seen three graduates go on to work at Overbury Stud. Dom, welcome along. How's things?
Yes, good, thank you. Good, thank you. It's actually stopped raining today.
That's a minor miracle. So tell me more about the course then. Is it just you that runs it or someone else?
No, myself and Ryan Hatch, we run this course up in Solihull Riding Club, which is near Birmingham. It's a six-week programme, basically getting people that have from disadvantaged background in the middle of Birmingham, in the Birmingham area, into horses and their equine management. It really goes from there.
And can they go, Dom, from the course into all different parts of sort of work within an equine facility, or is it quite specific?
Well, yes, we mainly deal with horses in general. We have four X-ray horses, with a view to, after completing the six weeks with us, going on into work within the equine industry. Most of our people tend to fancy going into the racing world or the bloodstock world, which is obviously great for horse racing. That is the general sort of consensus of what we do. So yeah.
And with regard to the people that you get in through the door, you say disadvantaged background. I guess these are people who have, you know, faced certain challenges up to that point in their lives.
We have a vast array of people from the middle of Birmingham. Now, I'm very fortunate that I've been brought up in the countryside, so to speak. But when you go into the middle of some of these cities and like Birmingham, it's there's not a lot of greenery for starters, which is, I suppose, fairly obvious. But it's not a place that I would be used to. And to give people the chance to be able to get out into the countryside, work with animals, is a huge thing. And obviously what comes with working with animals is accommodation as well, and it's countryside as well. So from that perspective, a lot of people see that as a way out, to get out of the city and into a healthier, more vibrant lifestyle in the countryside.
And we know that, you know, working with horses, people who've never touched or seen or you know, felt these animals in the flesh before, it can make a big difference to them. Have you seen that with the individuals you've had through the course?
Yes, absolutely huge. We all know about the positive mental health aspects of horses. Absolutely, we have seen some very withdrawn individuals that join our course, and they after spending a week or two with the horses and outside in the countryside in the fresh air, leading a nice healthier lifestyle, they flourish and they blossom as well as individuals, which is very, very rewarding for us as trainers to see the progression. And then for them to go on and into work is just, you know, even better.
So it's a six-week course. It's predominantly for people in that Midlands area. Do you run it pretty regularly? Are there certain, you know, points that you can start a course? For example, how many do you run a year?
Yeah, so it's a six-week course, and every 4 weeks we get what we call a new cohort in. It's funded by the West Midlands Combined Authority, so they've been great at backing us. And it is a pioneering course. This isn't carried out anywhere else in the countryside. If you're unemployed, we've had some ex-offenders as well. Just misdemeanor crimes that have gone down the wrong direction, the wrong path in life, and they want a second chance. And so they can come and sign up with us if they're in the West Midlands area, and join our course. yes, I know, as I say, sorry, going back to your question, yes, it's a six-week course, but every 4 weeks we'll start a new group. So then the new people are teaching, being taught by some of the older people, and they can share their experiences, if that makes sense. Because I take it for granted, and I'm sure you will, for someone that's been in the city, never been next to a horse, to be next to, you know, half a ton of and 17 hands of ex-racehorse, it's really, really intimidating for some people. Mm. And it's something that both myself and Ryan Hatch, we took for granted. Like, but to see the progression of where they come in and they're absolutely petrified, to them being, oh, it's to breeze this. It's so satisfying. It's so great to see. And it's so empowering for them, individuals themselves.
Dom, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Rishi Basad back with me. Send us into the weekend, or the nearly weekend, with a winner, please, Rish.
I put a horse on a follow for this season, and she runs today at Lingfield in the second race. Her name is Surveyor. She's had a couple of runs last year. She's got terrific pedigree, terrific Cheveley Park pedigree, by Pivotal out of Spatial. Spatial is a daughter of Spacious, who won a Royal Ascot a few years ago. But she's run really well in two what I think were pretty useful maidens or novices. One was a new market behind See the Fire. The other was behind a horse called Spiritual at Leicester. I think she could be in for a very good season. I think she might be a useful horse for the season ahead, given pedigree and runs last year. She's probably going to be a short prize today, but I really hope Surveyor wins for James Fanshawe in the second race at Lingfield.
Rishi, thanks ever so much. Thanks to everyone that's been a part of today's show, and to all of you out there that have listened. And we'll be back with you tomorrow. That will be Charlotte at the helm. Today was Thursday, the 4th of April. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App in partnership with FitStairs.